Welcome to the podcast. In today's episode, we speak with Arnav, who is co-founder and business lead at Stoker. Stoker is an asset tokenization platform built on the Bitcoin technology. They have been focused on Bitcoin structured and Bitcoin derivative products since 2018. We hope you enjoy. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. And if you enjoy the content, please remember to like, share, comment, or give us feedback. Welcome. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, and along with Lynn Berstow, today we're joined by Arnav from Stoker. Arnav, welcome and thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Israel. Thanks a lot, Lynn, also for having me. Looking forward.
Yeah, we're very excited to have this conversation because we're touching on something that we haven't really talked about specifically, but it's really how the Bitcoin protocol can help remake capital markets. And Arnav, we had a pre-conversation with you because we really wanted to be clear. There are a lot of kind of remaking of assets through tokenization in other blockchains, but you are really breaking new ground in terms of how you're using the Bitcoin protocol for what you're developing at Stoker. So to get started, maybe just a super brief explanation of what Stoker is, but we always like to dive into how you got involved in Bitcoin and how that formed the basis of your thought process for starting this company.
Thanks a lot. It's a very interesting question. You know, my introduction to Bitcoin, that was around 2014. I was primarily buying mousepad using Bitcoin, and there was a gaming interface called Steam. So in the Steam accounts, you can earn some keys, which is kind of in-game currency, convert those to keyboard, like mouse, kind of mouse pads, keyboards, and likes of those gaming equipments. And I didn't have access to credit card back in the days. I was not even 20, so I couldn't access that. And that gave me the access to a new way of, accessing the global financial market without realizing what Bitcoin can be. It was just, somebody told me that, hey, you can convert your keys to Bitcoin. I can buy stuffs. That was my initial introduction. It was never to store the Bitcoin as a store of value or any introduction to what money is. It was just purely a use case, a P2P cash, in that way you can see that, right? Over the time, I started working as a lawyer, and then I got exposed to more into Bitcoin rabbit hole while doing some policy work. Still, I would say I was not so much deep into what Bitcoin is. It was just, some kind of legal opinion that I was drafting for my firm, and that was my exposure. 2015, when I moved actually in Europe in that sense, and I started looking more into the Bitcoin and more into the understanding of what Bitcoin is because of some of my academic stuffs and something, I started looking more into it and what it means. And then it came to a very interesting realization at that point of time is beyond dematerialized securities in the 1980s when NASDAQ infrastructure came in, we did not really rethink or did not try to rethink how the securities can be settled, right? And there is a pause. And the question was, can the blockchain infrastructure, which is a very efficient infrastructure for record keeping, can it be used to manage securities or capital market instruments? And I was also working as a capital market side lawyer. So kind of that gave me that insights, and that gave me also kind of curiosity to understand, or can it be used, right? The more and more I entered the Bitcoin rabbit hole, it became very much clear, okay, Bitcoin is going to be a sound money, and it's already kind of in that way, in that direction. And I would say we're in a still very early phase of Bitcoin in that way. If Bitcoin is a sound money in that way, capital markets will be built on it, on top of it, right? And that's what a significant infrastructural, I think, opportunity that I saw can be used, where you can actually issue securities or stock market products on top of the Bitcoin infrastructure. Because then you technically, and this is kind of in a hypothetical, not I would not say hypothetical, but in a interesting world, a lot of assets will be denominated in Bitcoin. Technically, those assets need to perform significantly to outperform Bitcoin. And maybe imagine a MicroStrategy, like can the MicroStrategy stocks outperform Bitcoin or vice versa in that way, right? And that gave me kind of an understanding, okay, there can be some opportunity that we can create a capital market infrastructure. And the Stoker was kind of, experimenting that. And Stoker started in 2018, so it was quite early. That time there was no liquid or like there was no I would say, sophisticated infrastructure for L2 in that way. But over the time, in 2018 onwards, as Liquid infrastructure became more and more prominent, we started looking more into Bitcoin and how we can issue securities on top of Bitcoin.
Sorry to take a break here, but as our audience may be a little less sophisticated with some of these terms, Arnab, can you just take a step back and explain what Layer 2 is? And
mm-hmm. So... yeah, there is a debate whether it's a layer 2 or sidechain, right? Let's not go into too much on that nuances. But where is kind of Bitcoin is the main on-chain platform, or the layer 1 in that way, that is the base layer. And the entire idea of the block size wall, the base layer to be as vanilla, as simple as possible, you will not have lot of smart contract capabilities that Ethereum has on the base layer of Bitcoin. Layer 2 comes with those features, and this is, I think, the feature that is interesting for the current discussion, is a smart contract capabilities in that way, right? Or issuance of smart assets. So if the Bitcoin is the layer 1 in that way, the Liquid sits as a layer 2, like similar to Lightning also as a layer 2. And that means it has an element to issue native currencies like Tether, or payment currencies like stablecoins like Tether, USDC, likes of them, as well as you can issue securities like what we are doing. This is, I think, the primary kind of context of the layer 2. But layer 2 also, like, if you say simplistic way you understand, is layer 2 can be also used to reduce the transaction fee and make much more smaller size transaction at much more accessible way. Liquid is one of the layer 2 solution on Bitcoin that was structured or proposed by Blockstream team. And then now there is a big federation that is managing the Liquid. Liquid is kind of a federation in that way. Federation manages the peg-in, peg-out processes. That is, Bitcoin gets wrapped inside the Liquid infrastructure. If you want to use the Liquid infrastructure, you have to use Liquid Bitcoin, which is not a utility shitcoin token. It's technically a wrapped BTC. And that is used for as a currency for the infrastructure. In Ethereum, if you use that, it will be the gas fees, right? That's what you're comparing with. So that's what Liquid is. It's similar to Lightning. I think one of the key elements of Liquid is the confidentiality. Liquid, by default, every transaction on Liquid are confidential transactions, which is very important for a financial markets product, right? Because you don't want a transaction that is happening where somebody wants to outrun you or, you know, try to understand or speculate what asset managers are trading. Liquid gives a very strong infrastructure because on Liquid, you know something has moved from somewhere to somewhere, but you do not know who has transacted with whom and what has moved. So that gives, by default, any kind of transactions a confidentiality umbrella in that way.
And Arnab, you mentioned over the course of the years, you came to this realization, okay, Bitcoin is sound money. And of course, you're choosing to build on these layer two solutions on top of the Bitcoin protocol. Can you maybe very briefly explain your view on Bitcoin as a sound protocol? I mean, you strategically are choosing the Bitcoin blockchain, right, to build your technology. You strategically chose not to issue your own token. And I want to just touch on these because we do see still a lot of, you know, a lot of other tech companies and startups going the other routes, right? Maybe I'm going to build on, you know, Tron, Ethereum, all these other, you know, technologies that claim I can do lots of smart contract functionality better. I'm going to issue my own token. You stayed very true to Bitcoin as a sound money and as a sound protocol. Can you maybe give your reasoning on why that is, that you chose that route?
So the first and foremost, Bitcoin is, I think, in the entire blockchain history or entire history of DLT, this is the only stable platform, the oldest and the stable platform. Never been into any hacks or attacks on that way. And the infrastructure has been battle tested for years, right? And it has also seen different, I would say, political phases. Bitcoin has a lot of political phases, right? And still kept on going, right? Rather than doing a hard fork that significantly divided the value. You have Bcash and all this thing come in, but did not bring take the value with them. Bitcoin still hold the value, right? So that way, I would say politically, it became very stable. And technology-wise, also it's quite stable. So that gives a ground comfort for issuance of any financial products, a complex assets on top of it. The second for the Bitcoin, the rationality for us is Bitcoin is decentralized in that way, right? There is no foundation that has issued the token, or there is no few entities managing a multisig, right? So regulatory-wise, Bitcoin is, I think, the most cleanest asset as a commodity compared to any other asset. So when you're issuing a securities on top of those infrastructure, you do not have those regulatory gray area, unlike to other L2 on EVM structures or other L1 on some other infrastructures, right? Where their native coins are being treated by SSE sometimes at unregistered securities, sometimes some other asset classes, right? Most of them SSE are considering right now as unregistered securities. And many other jurisdictions may also be considering that if SSE goes after that. So Bitcoin gives that level of comfort. And it's very important because it's very important for an industry that we are operating, because when you're issuing our financial assets, these sometimes have a maturity of 5 years, sometimes 10 years, sometimes 15 years, right? So these are long duration products. For long duration products, you would like to issue on an infrastructure that are stable, that are kind of doesn't have that much of gray regulatory areas, right? And that's what the Bitcoin infrastructure provides. This is the second, I would say, one of the key rationale for us to go deep down and kind of go all in into the infrastructure. The third interesting angle where we see is a very strong element is Bitcoin brand, right? When we are creating on top of Bitcoin infrastructure, I don't have to educate the market about Bitcoin right now. All the Bitcoin ETFs are creating so much good quality institutional content that the market or institutional audience will be educated about Bitcoin and the nuances of Bitcoin. And when you're creating on top of it, it's like creating on an infrastructure that is already self-marketing without a CEO, and you're building on top of that brand, so you don't have to sell the infrastructure capability. Infrastructure already has sold, right? Whereas if you're using some other infrastructure, as you mentioned, like Tron and all this other infrastructure, you have to really explain those infrastructure first. And then you explain your own product. And this is like too much for a smaller company. And that's not our business to explain infrastructure, right? That's, I would say, the third one. And the last, and I think you have also raised a very important point, why we did not issue our own token, right? Stockcoin is in the market for the last 6 years. We have seen the entire ICO market pump and dump number of times, right? It's not one time, number of times in different form. Normal ICO token, then the NFTs, then the governance token. We don't know how many of the cycles will come again. Issuing a token and managing the token price is not our business or not our business model, right? And this, we have seen a lot of founders in the space try to do that. The moment they start a business, they issue a token and they try to manage the token price and then they try to create a business in parallel. These two are completely different business models. And it's very hard to make both of them successful at the same time, right? Rather, we try to be very focused. Our main business model is to be cash flow positive, make it a robust business case, have the right client, rather than talking to the market makers every day and supporting the token price on different exchanges. And that's a complete distraction, right? It doesn't make sense, right? Mm. There are also a lot of tokenized securities platforms have done in the past, and there's still some, I think, are trying to do it, right? But technically, if you're using a platform like Stalker, you can invest with Bitcoin, and we have seen a lot of volume on the platform while people are investing in Bitcoin. Best part, they're also getting payout in Bitcoin. And also you can invest in stable coins if you want, right? You don't require a native token issued by Stalker. That's the reason we kind of completely stayed away from that route by issuing a utility coin. It can be used just to raise capital, but I don't think it really creates a better product experience for our end user.
Yeah, I think Israel and I have these conversations often, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it feels like tokenization is really exit liquidity for the investors and the founders, and not necessarily focus. And it takes the focus away from the business model, which it feels that that's what you're really trying to build with Stalker. Can you go into a little bit more depth about exactly what Stalker is?
Mm-hmm. So Stalker is, there are two angles of Stalker. One is we are an asset tokenization platform. What do I mean by that? It means we are helping issuers, asset managers, fund managers, any kind of sophisticated financial markets player to issue securities in tokenized format on Stalker. And we help them to issue on the LiquidNet. And we provide them the end-to-end solution for the tokenization for the full life cycle from issuance till the redemption or the payout. That's the first key pillar. The second is we are also an investment platform. That means once these assets are tokenized, they need to be sold in the primary market. Stalker is a platform where those issuers are selling those assets in the primary platform to sophisticated investors or professional investors. And once they receive it, they can trade on third-party exchanges. We are not an exchange by ourselves. Our vision is to create or operate as a hub and spoke model where we help issuers to issue the primary assets in the center. And then it can be traded in different venues and it's a hub and spoke model. So Stalker's issued assets have been already traded on Bitfinex Securities, on Merge, on Siteswap. There are other platforms also in pipeline which will integrate over the time, right? So these are the two main aspects of Stalker. One is helping issuers tokenize in a full end-to-end solution model where we provide the legal structure, the tech, the compliance, the payment gateways, everything you require to issue the assets. And once it's issued for the full lifecycle management, and then other side, once those assets are tokenized, issuers can sell those assets on the platform. They can subscribe, or investors can actually create a Stalker account, subscribe with stablecoin, with Bitcoin, with USD, and get also payout from the Stalker. So this is kind of primarily the two angles of Stalker.
Okay, and so maybe we can start with that first aspect, Arnab, just to get a little more clarity. When you're talking about helping issuers tokenize their assets, what kind of assets are we speaking of? I mean, are these funds? Are these companies? What are the different assets that you're able to tokenize and issue?
So on Stalker, any tokens that we issue, these are all regulated securities. That means these are transferable securities under European capital markets laws called MiFID. And these are issued as a normal securities product, which you can usually get from your broker, right? The difference is these can be held in your Bitcoin wallet rather than in your brokerage email ID account based structure, right? We have assets that are issued with ISIN numbers. So this is a kind of the identification code for any securities. So we have one of the flagship product on the platform, Blockstream Mining Node, that has an ISIN number, and few other products also has ISIN number. So technically these are securities, and you can book with your normal accounting way how you do book it, because these are securities. And all the tax related to securities gets applicable on that. In terms of how these issuers are really kind of taking place, they are taking place from the issuer structure. So we also provide the legal structure from which the securities are issued. And once the investors are buying it, they have to create the KYC AML process. They have to go through all the AML KYC process on Stalker before they even can subscribe or participate in holding those securities, right? If I answered your question, maybe you have a second part of the question as well, right? I missed it.
No, I mean, I wanted to start with that first pillar that you mentioned. Okay, and then once you've helped tokenize this security, and just to be very clear, I mean, what you're speaking of is a fully regulated security in the European markets, right? That's
exactly. So we issue, so primarily this is issued from a Luxembourg securitization vehicle. It's a securitization structures which securitizes risk. So that's one way. This is a kind of a debt instrument in that way. If you would like to understand whether it's equity or debt, it's more like a debt product. Okay. We have also tokenized funds. We have a Luxembourg tokenized fund that natively have issued the fund units fully tokenized on the Liquid network. These are mostly an equity instrument. So primarily we are issuing between the debt and mezzanine and equity for the funds. We have not tokenized the equity of the company. In Europe, continental Europe, still is very hard to tokenize the pure equity. Under Swiss law, you can do it, but not in continental Europe at the moment. Kind of fully tokenized in legal formats.
I know Larry Fink has even talked about eventually all assets will become tokenized. Can you just highlight a few of the advantages of having a tokenized asset that would be probably like liquidity, jurisdiction, and trading days, like times that you trade?
I think there are two angles. I think Larry Fink, right now, the BlackRock is one of the biggest proponents, right? They also launched a tokenized T-bill with one of the very strong players in the market, Securitize. And we also quite respect them for what they've created in the market over the years. So I think there are two angles of the benefits. One angle of the investors, the other angle for the issuers. Let me start first with the investors here. For the investors, I think the one very interesting angle, what we have seen also, because being in the market for 6 years, we are quite fortunate to have a product that fully matured during the life cycle, the BMN, that was issued in 2021 and matured in 2024. And what we have seen, one of the key angle for such a product or for such a tokenized product is the ownership concept. When I say an ownership concept, it means in the normal traditional world, maybe in 1940s or 50s, or still today in some jurisdictions, you still have the bearer instrument concept, right? In the securities market, the concept of bearer instrument is going out. More and more, you have to rely always on a broker, right? What tokenization gives is a concept of bearer instrument back to the investors. That means they can hold the securities in their wallet without a broker dealer. And when we issue the securities, they are natively issued in the tokenized format. So in the same wallet where you hold your Bitcoin can also hold the securities. And this has two main interesting angles. One is you want to borrow or lend against it, you can use that. You can use a very, because that's a 101 of capital market, borrowing and lending, right? And there we see primarily most of the securities can be used for borrowing and lending without having to go for a very complex, cost-intensive borrowing and lending process, because their decentralized exchanges have created a very unique architecture of borrowing and lending, and that can be leveraged for tokenized securities. That's one. So it's kind of not liquidity immediately by trading, but opportunity to borrow and lend against it. And for bigger investors, that's a big opportunity. Second thing is definitely the ownership, because you are not paying now a brokerage fees. You can actually hold on your Bitcoin wallet without paying a brokerage fees. That's a very strong angle for bigger AUM products. That's interesting. And also for smaller AUM products, it's also interesting, because if your brokers get bankrupt or something like that, you take that risk of that brokerage going out of the business. So that's the second thing, is kind of the ownership. The third thing, which we see, is more and more a lot of investors are kind of really understanding that value proposition, is when you have the token, you have a direct relationship with the issuance company. You do not, like, for example, if I'm holding a Tesla stocks in Europe right now, I'm not maybe holding directly, I'm holding to a number of brokerage houses. So there is no direct relationship with the company. So if company wants to give some direct benefits, they cannot. They may not even have my information, right? In normal tokenization world, the company has a direct relationship with the investors. And that means they can take the feedback, they can create a community much more faster way. This we will see more and more relevant over the time, as both the money component and the securities component sit on chain. They'll be very interesting, because you can pay the dividend in a stablecoin format and all these things, right? And this will be open a different kind of complete uncharted territory, which I cannot even, you know, fathom. There are a lot of things, a lot of possibilities are there when this direct relationship can be leveraged. These are the three things. Sorry, Israel, you want to say something?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of reacting as we go here. But that third component, I think, is, that's pretty big, right? I mean, that's going to open up, a whole new, a very different relationship with you know, ownership of equity, as investors look to, you know, be a part of, I guess, the global economy. And, you know, maybe to that point, Arnab, also for the investors. So this I think is very true in most developing economies, that there's a strong demand and appetite to, you know, maybe plug into the global capital markets, right? And that's pretty difficult. So if I'm in Mexico, if I'm in Brazil, or any other example we could use, gaining access to the global economy, it's kind of hard, right? I mean, first I need to kind of maybe dollarize some of my savings. Then maybe I'd ideally like to access, you know, S&P 500 or U.S. capital markets. And that all presents many steps of friction, many hurdles. It's not easy, right? So you're talking about a much more open capital markets in the future, where I can just basically, through Bitcoin, access through direct ownership, you know, any number of securities. I mean, what are your views on that accessibility to the broader economy?
We actually did a very interesting product, or we launched a very interesting product a few months back on Stoker. It's called CMSTR. CMSTR is a very nerdy element. It's C means 100. We took the Roman element of 100. So one CMSTR underneath holds 100 MSTR. So what we did is actually we wrapped the MicroStrategy product and issued on the platform. And we saw a lot of demand for investors who are willing to trade MicroStrategy against Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Because MicroStrategy is correlated one-to-one with Bitcoin at the moment. And there is no platform at the moment where you can trade based on the Bitcoin. You can do with Bitcoin futures, but that becomes very complex.
Yeah.
And we also saw demand now for accessing those products with USDT or a stablecoin, right? As you mentioned rightly, you know, you have a lot of, let's say, for example, a lot of Latin American countries, right? As their own currency is in a high inflationary market, they always want to access some USD denominated products. And that means they would like to access, or they would like to have a US brokerage account, or, you know, US banking account, or local brokerage supports that. And not in every jurisdiction that's possible. And this is the reason also we are seeing a growth of stablecoins in those economies right now. How I see also kind of stablecoins is an entry to the Bitcoin. Because stablecoins give them the comfort that, hey, this is USD. Now, I don't want to go into the merits of, you know, algorithmic stablecoins and all these things, but we saw the USDT as a prime example, the growth in the volume over the last couple of years, that it has been adopted by ground level people and the ground level users, right? And the trust is being created. Now, once they're into that stablecoin, they understand the DLT infrastructure, they can better come to Bitcoin. And I see between that stablecoin and Bitcoin, maybe there is also room of those financial assets like tokenized MicroStrategy, tokenized S&P 500 and likes of those products, right? Because these people have heard about this product and now they can hold in a smaller fractional way in their wallets. And these guys then can potentially move to the Bitcoin because once they understand, okay, I'm trying to de-risk myself from the inflation, what can be the better product than Bitcoin? And this is how I see the elevation will be attained. So that's, I see, kind of a very interesting opportunity for us to create some infrastructure and products in that way, where investors on those jurisdictions who cannot access those financial products in the right way can be accessed. And I think what Israel, you mentioned a very interesting point, and I'm considering, because I'm also born coming from an emerging economy, right? I'm born in India, moved to Germany in 2015, and I also understand the pain point of inflation. On the other side, I also understand then more and more trust towards the current financial system, at least from my generation onwards and your generation also, it's decreasing. I would say more we go into the generation ladder, it's decreasing, right? Because they are seeing more and more interesting stuff. So technically, everybody would like to have the ownership. And the ownership of money is one, ownership of securities is one, but the ownership of a product that is inflation hedge will be another thing. And people would look for these alternatives because pension or retirement plans will be not as attractive in our generation or our next generation as it used to be before and the previous generation. So what are the alternative? And the alternative is you have to create your own portfolios and likes of them, right? And there I see a huge opportunity, you know, to create such products and service the market. And that may be also the adoption of the capital markets on Bitcoin, how it can develop over the time.
Yeah, that brings up my next question. So thank you for leading into that so easily. But the Blockstream mining note, I mean, you're securitizing hash rate. And so this is something that hasn't, you know, in addition to tokenizing traditional financial assets like the MicroStrategy stock, talk to us a little bit about the BMN, because that's a fascinating product. And you've just completed a 3-year note, and now you've issued a 4-year note. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you're making mining, Bitcoin mining, more accessible through this tokenized asset?
So BMN is a very interesting product, I would say, for the entire tokenization space, not only about the Bitcoin space, right? Because it allowed us to rethink how our financial products can be structured, right? It's not just wrapping a T-bill, right? It's really understanding a novel asset class. Can that asset class survive in tokenized way? And what benefits it can give? And that's how the BMN was conceived, right? And the Blockstream team is very intelligent and very smart, and they know what they're doing, right? And Adam Back is one of the core architect of this product. So the Blockstream mining node is a 3-year product. I'm talking about the Blockstream mining node 1. Now we launched the 2, but the 1, it has been issued in 2021, and now it matured in July 2024. It's a 3-year note, that is a debt instrument, that is issued to the investors, primarily non-US investors. And the investors, what they purchased when they bought the note is a fixed hash rate, 2000 terahash. So one BMN gave a 2000 terahash for a period of 3 years. And whatever Bitcoin is mined during the period, minus the cost, has been given to the investors at maturity. So it's a product that did not convert the Bitcoin to dollar and gave it, but kind of gave an opportunity to accumulate more Bitcoin. And this product gave a 32% Bitcoin basis return. That means it's outperformed Bitcoin. I don't know that many products in the market that actually did it. And the BMN did it. That raised, on dollar basis, it gave over 101% return. In simple sense, BMN raised $40 million in 2021 when it was issued. It was kind of in the bull market of the entire blockchain crypto space. The BMN raised in that phase. And it paid out this July around $80 million worth in Bitcoin. A significant amount of payment has gone to the investors. And what is actually very interesting is the entire issuance took place on the Liquid network. So the securities were issued on Liquid. And as an investor, they hold that on the Liquid Bitcoin wallet. So it's a green wallet, which is a Bitcoin wallet investors could hold. Also Siteswap wallet. And during the course of this 3-year period, they also were able to trade on different exchanges. The BMN at maturity paid out whatever Bitcoin is mined, minus the cost. Cost expense ratio was below 3% for the entire 3-year period, so it was quite economical in that way compared to such an alternative asset class. And the entire product actually was issued purely natively in tokenized format. Even we saw some institutions actually holding these assets in purely tokenized format. So it's a very interesting experimentation. And the BMN 2 now that succeeded, the BMN 1 has been launched a few weeks back. And now there are different series of the BMN 2 are coming actually.
Yeah, you know, that's a fascinating example of, I guess, the advantages and potential of these tokenized securities, right? So you that example in particular, so if I had been an investor in this BMN note, I would have basically purchased, I would have put in one Bitcoin, gotten back at the maturity 1.3, I believe you said it was around 30%, right?
Yeah.
And had liquidity if I wanted to along that entire path, right? I mean,
that trading volume, this is very interesting also, as you mentioned as well. So we because we have a lot of data for the entire product because we were managing the investor register for this product. And we saw over 20 million volume of trading for the full life cycle. Mind it, the maximum AUM of this product was 80 million. So 20 million was a very significant volume.
Oh, wow. Okay. One-fourth of the original raise, right? That's what the trading volume was throughout the life cycle? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And this product gave a very interesting transparency angle because the Blockstream, as they are very well capable in their tech infrastructure, they created a very interesting dashboard where investors could track on every day how much Bitcoin is mined. So the moment the Bitcoin was being mined from the pool, investors can track that. So that level of granularity and transparency was given to the investors. It's kind of a daily NAV in traditional fund industry, right? In this case, it's automatized because the underlying asset is completely digital on-chain. So you can have the fund information or the structures information about the performance on a daily basis without having to kind of wait for that. And that was giving a very interesting investment outlook. And that's the reason also induced a lot of people to speculate what would be the trading volume, because the beginning of the term, people were expecting more Bitcoin to be mined. So their volatility was much more higher. So trading increased over the time as the mining kind of, people understand how much and many days and all these things are there. The predictability became much more accurate. The trading volume decreased because nobody wanted to sell because they already booked some profit. Also very interesting is the BMN got the benefit of the Chinese mining ban. That was in 2021 in July, right? So that made the BMN kind of outperformed any competitive product if you would have purchased a spot BTC at the time period or a DCA. Because every three, four years, you will have those Black Swan event, and that BMN kind of give to the investors the benefit of that.
Yeah, some additional benefits I see are that, I think we've had a lot of conversations on this podcast about the importance of mining and diversification in mining, and this allows people to participate in mining. And I think, the idea is that mining Bitcoin will be it needs to be more profitable than actually buying Bitcoin, or you wouldn't mine. So it's like that's the whole philosophy behind it. But this allows people to get involved with mining without necessarily making capital outlay, without having to be tied up for periods of 6 months to years on contracts. So it's a great way for people to participate in that. And then Adam Back, as you said, I mean, he's the architect of the product, right? So that's a powerful statement too.
Yeah, I think the Blockstream, like, because we spoke to a lot of the investors who invested in BMN, and we created a very strong relationship with them by talking to understand what are their motivations are and what they're looking for. And many people are coming from family office background or kind of high net worth, ultra high net worth investors. They want to mine, but some people doesn't have the capacity or the full skill set to manage the mining on this. What is your kilowatt hour? What is your hash rate? And all this, what is the uptime, which ASICs and all these things, right? It can be a pet project for certain people, but when they're deploying 5, 6 million or 3, 4 million, they cannot manage that in institutional scheme, right? Or in a professional scheme. So for those guys, this product, kind of for them, they're relying on the Blockstream's tech competence and the brand reputation and everything. And then they say, okay, here's the capital. I buy a full paid in hash rate contract. Now you decide what is uptime, downtime, energy, equipment refresh, all these kind of things, right? All the headache or the complexities goes out. The second is very interesting, as Linu mentioned over here, is when the BMN was issued, we tried to differentiate from the cloud mining, this product. And the cloud mining is you raise the capital, then you go and deploy the capital. So you buy the ASIC. So there is always a waiting period of 6-7 months or 3-4 months or something like that, right? And you can lose money because technically during that duration, it's a unsecured loan to those entities, interest-free. And investors are taking the full risk. So we try to structure the instrument that the moment the offering gets over, and offering was getting over within 2 weeks to 1 month, then from the very next day, the mining starts for the investors. So the first, second series usually takes a longer time because the deployment schedule is there. That is longer, means it's maximum 1 month. And from the second onwards, the very next day, the mining starts. So that means Blockstream has to deploy the CapEx investment, plug the equipment in, the very moment the offering gets over, the mining starts for them. So they don't have to take the risk of the time duration, and it creates a huge differentiating factor from the cloud mining in that way.
Yeah. And you brought up an interesting point, your clients. So you said family offices and high net worth individuals. Who are the clients of Stoker, and what are you finding? Do you have a lot of true institutional appetite yet, or is this just still evolving as institutions are becoming more aware of the opportunities in Bitcoin? What are the early investors in Stoker?
So primarily, Stoker only charge the issuers, the asset managers, fund managers, issuers like Blockstream and likes of them, right? We do not charge the investors. Investors use our platform, but we do not charge them. We give them a better experience so that our issuers can actually sell them, because most of the issuers doesn't have the capacity or doesn't have the resource to create those user experiences, right? That's what we are doing. We are primarily at the moment, so Stoker is very much focusing on the Bitcoin derivatives and Bitcoin structured products, because this is what we see primarily a good opportunity for bringing tokenized securities to the market. And this is kind of what the hypothesis is, right? We are sitting at around 1 trillion for the Bitcoin market cap. From 1 trillion to 2 trillion as we are moving, we will see a lot of derivatives and structured products coming into space. This is also We saw in the Bitcoin ETFs, right? We saw a good chunk of the Bitcoin, I think 20% of the Bitcoin ETF volume at the moment that are being subscribed are coming from institutions. That looks small, but the volume, I think roughly around 17 billion came as a net positive in the volumes. And 20% is a significant in the Bitcoin ETFs, right? So we see more and more institutions are coming to Bitcoin. And when more and more institutions are coming into Bitcoin and we're moving from 1 trillion to 2 trillion, we will see a lot of Bitcoin derivatives, structured products like downside protected, upside cap, and all this thing. And these products then can be issued in tokenized format because that audience understand Bitcoin wallet, that audience understands blockchain, that audience understands UTXO or transactions, right? So that's a kind of a low-hanging fruit in that terms of audience in that way. So this is kind of the asset category. That's the reason we bought Blockstream Mining Node. We issued Basics. It's an ASIC fund that leveraged, you know, kind of pricing discount that last year ASICs market. So we launched MicroStrategy tokenized version, and also maybe in some other treasury products, which are kind of Bitcoin treasury products, we're also planning to wrap them. That's kind of the main at the moment focus. But we also are seeing a lot of asset managers, mid-sized asset managers, boutique asset managers, they're willing to tokenize because BlackRock is now leading the game and they're all kind of trying to experiment because, as I mentioned, it's very interesting for a lot of issuers to create a direct relationship to the investors, right?
Right.
Which in traditional market they cannot do. And the second thing for the investors or the issuers, it makes sense, is, for example, if you are a fund of let's say 1 billion AUM and you want to issue, if you're issuing even 10,000 ticket size subscription tickets, your admin cost can be significantly higher in a legacy format. With tokenized format, you're leveraging the technology, so your cost doesn't increase so much. So for them, it's a no-brainer to use that. And more people are trying to create a direct relationship with the family office, high net worth investors without brokerage houses, and tokenization enables them. So there we see a lot of those other institutions like asset managers, fund managers, tokenize some of the alternative assets, because primarily we believe the, I would say, 3 to 5 years adoption cycle of the tokenization will come from alternative assets market. It is Bitcoin derivatives, structured products, PE vehicles, private credit funds like Sub-Bell.
Yeah, I mean, the accessibility to the, I guess, an investable universe, to put it that way, is going to, I mean, grow a lot, right? On the other end of that, then, the investors are not... Who are they today, and how do you see this kind of growing as this industry evolves?
At the moment, most of the investors are coming from the high net worth background. So they're ultra high net worth investors or high net worth investors. Many of the users on Stockart have a significant exposure to Bitcoin, or they are interested to have significant exposure to Bitcoin. We are also seeing family offices coming, who are kind of trying to expose themselves in the Bitcoin and Bitcoin adjacent world. This kind of audience are actually coming in. We are also talking to a few institutions. We already have few institutions already on the platform. We are trying to get some more. And there we see also kind of demand is growing because institutions are entering into Bitcoin. They are, I think that this is a very interesting change of conversation I can share over here, right? In the last couple of years, when we are talking about issuing securities in Bitcoin, the first things were, hey, you know, Bitcoin proof of work, bad for the environment. We will not touch it. We'll go for proof of stake because that's good for environment, right? It was a good greenwashing marketing narrative for POS, right? Over the time, as BlackRock said, I don't care. You're greenwashing. I'm out from the greenwashing discussion. People are kind of trying to go back to the basics. Hey, the return has to be given, right? We are in a market where we cannot give return. We will not. A lot of people are actually now trying to forget those conversation that, hey, Bitcoin is proof of work and all the proof of work is bad and all these things. They're saying, okay, we would like to understand how we can issue securities on the Bitcoin layer too, because we think the regulatory wise is much more stable. And we also see the chaos that is in the EVM side, right? The economics are changing, this merge, like different terminologies every second days are coming. And they are feeling much more chaotic in that way, right? When the Bitcoin side market is a bit stable, I would say, right? We do not do a significant tech shift. And that gives a lot of comfort to a lot of institutions, right? So we are seeing that maturity is happening. And very interesting fact, and this is also like a lot of, you know, my friends in the banking world or in the legal world, they say, hey, you know, institutions will not hold in a non-custodial wallet. They will only hold in a custodian wallet and all these things. But I see more and more understanding is coming to them. They would like to create competence of non-custodial multisigs and all these things. And we have seen some investors in the platform, right? Because we don't want to dumb down the tech. Because it doesn't help. What we're trying to give the right tools, and maybe over the time, institutional multi-custody and all these things we will enable on the platform with some right partnerships, and that will bring more and more institutions in the space. Because we see as more and more private banks, pension funds are coming to Bitcoin, they would also like to go into the adjacent tokenized securities, most likely in the same Bitcoin infrastructure.
Shifting the conversation just a little bit about what Stoker provides the services to how you operate. Can you walk us through exactly how Stoker is structured, your co-founders, and how you operate in terms of geographical distribution or your team? I'd love to dive a little deeper about the brains behind this fascinating remaking of the capital markets.
So we are three main co-founders operating the daily show, let's say Stoker. This myself, I'm primarily looking after anything business, anything strategic, focus of the business, key client relationship. That means key client relationship in terms of coordinating with the issuers as well as some of the key investors. Also, I'm very much always happy to look into the support chats, right? It's kind of like I really like to enter into support sometimes, you know, do myself on Telegram, and that really excites me. And that really makes me connected to the product. I would say I'm quite curious myself. Also, I'm looking into any strategic fundraising for Stoker or anything that is integration with the key, partners. My another co-founder, Tobias Seidel, he's also the co-CEO along with me. He is managing mostly the regulatory, the compliance, also the product roadmap. He has a very strong legal background. He has been into the Luxembourg legal industry for over 15 years, but it's very interesting. He loves visuals. Like he's a lawyer who understands graphics, as I say, right? A lawyer who understands colors, right? And we met actually in a very interesting way. We met in a Munich bar back in, I think, 2017-ish. And we are not the childhood friends, but somehow we kind of bonded and we created the relationship over the years. And now we are working for 6 years together. My third co-founder, he is based with me in Berlin. He is a tech brain. He's managing the entire tech architecture of Stoker. Recently, also, I think the one of the most strenuous thing that he did, but also like he created the architecture for that. We paid out over 1,200 Bitcoin in July, and we are still paying out some of those Bitcoin. And he is kind of the architect of all the structures of token issuance, payouts, subscriptions, and everything. So we are a very small kind of team. We are a 15 members team at the moment, operating primarily in the European market. We are the company is licensed in Luxembourg. We are a virtual as a service provider in Luxembourg. We have a strong team in Luxembourg. We have some tech people are sitting in the the German office at the moment, primarily from Berlin office. And we have also some people spread out because, as we know, the entire market is very decentralized generally. So finding the right talent, we cannot just stay in one city or one office, right? We have to find the right talent in the right space. And right talent who are eager in Bitcoin is also very hot, right? It's a very unique combination. And we are kind of fortunate to actually grow the team. And the team is also quite stable for years, like 6 years we're working. We have people who are with us for 5-6 years also. We have people who joined 2 years back, right? So we have a very strong, I would say, team cohesiveness, though we are working quite remote, right? We're trying to be more and more those physical meet like database and everything, but the company is technically running on Slack emails, right? And it's working pretty nicely because the people have kind of level of profitability. So that's how the structure is. We recently have a board at the moment. So on this is an executive committee of the board. It's Dr. Adam Beck joined it. Its announcement will come soon, but he joined the board along with Raul. Raul is also, I know him for quite some years. He was ex-Kraken. So we are trying to find the right people also who can help Stalker in the right direction, because we require people who understand financial markets. We require people who understand capital markets as well as Bitcoin. That's how we are trying to find the right team. So that's in short about how the company is structured and how we are kind of growing as a team.
Well, congratulations, first of all, Arnab. I mean, you're building quite a, quite a strong foundation and team. You've raised $4 million to date, Arnab, and you're structuring another fundraising. We don't have to get into, the size of that, but just generally how you now clearly have some traction. How is the company growing from here? I mean, what are the next steps for Stalker as far as, offerings, the team, any other growth areas that are strategic for you guys in the next, say, 12 months?
So Stalker has been always very cash disciplined in that way. So we have very conservatively raised capital compared to a lot of our counterparts. And the reason what we wanted to spend a lot of time over the last couple of years is having the right licenses, so we do not do anything because we are in a very heavily regulated market. So we spend a lot of time in finding the right licenses and acquiring that, and also finding the right jurisdiction where we can issue those assets. The second was finding the right product, creating attraction, right? Because I'm not very much a fan of telling this amount of money we have tokenized or this amount of money we have raised, when my metrics is how much amount of money we have paid out to the investors, right? Because we are tokenizing an investment asset. If it does not pay out, there is a success. That's actually a KPI. And to achieve that, you require a time horizon, right? And that's what BMN gave us, a product that gave return and outperformed Bitcoin. So now we are going into the growth phase, I would say. That's the reason we are embarking on a bigger capital raise, because we are also getting a lot of institutional demand that, hey, we would like to work with you guys, but we need API infrastructure, which we do not provide at the moment, right? So for a lot of banking and financial institutions, they cannot use our dashboard. They need to use their own dashboard, and they need us to give them the API infrastructure. And this we need to build. So that's one. The second is the reason also is the market signaling, right? A lot of banking institutions or financial institutions would like to only work with you when they feel that we are well capitalized. This year, we will be cash flow positive. We have already generated, I would say, 80% plus of our revenue target this year. So we are in a very good pathway. But this signaling will actually help us to get more businesses. And this business will be a very long-term relationship business, because once those financial institutions tokenize an asset, this will be 5 years, 6 years, 10 years product. So that means it's a sticky revenue in that way, in the revenue terms. We are also trying to expand our distribution capacity, because we have very strong products like the BMN, the product I think that can be itself a 1 billion plus AUM product. And how I compare is, if you see the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, and that was when we launched the BMN, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is a very interesting comparison. They were sitting at 25 billion volume. The only thing that does is buy the Bitcoin and hold. There is no effective way to accumulate more Bitcoin. Mm. Accumulate more Bitcoin can be done in a few ways. One way a lot of companies are these days going is leverage trading, which is risky. Definitely gives a return, but it also has risk, right? Where with the BMN, you're actually leveraging the mining. So you are securing the network, plus you're expecting that, okay, because of the market cycle, certain periods, mining will be more profitable than buying, and you make your return in that cycles, right? And this product can give a very interesting return opportunity. And this product, that means if it's rightly put forward in the right audience, I think it can grow plus above 1 billion plus AUM. So what we are trying to do is a very creating a strong distribution, pipeline, as well as a good team to create the right partnerships with wealth managers, private banks. So this asset can be not only put forward in front of the Bitcoin audience, but non-Bitcoin audience who are primarily interested in alternative assets. And this is a cash generating, it's a revenue generating asset in that way, because the mining generates a return, right? So these are some of the key focus. And also Stockard is in the process of getting the MiCAR license. MiCAR is the European crypto assets license. We are already a virtual asset service provider in Luxembourg. So we are obviously have the ambition to be the transitioning into the marketing crypto assets license. And that will enable us to provide the functionalities like we can enable subscriptions and Bitcoin stable coins and the payouts in Bitcoin stable coins. Because we feel if you are creating a sound money, like capital markets product in that way, payouts and subscriptions should be enabled in Bitcoin, because that's what some of our investors are looking for, right? So that's the short of our roadmap and the next, I would say, few steps, which will help us to Stockard to go into the next phase of growth where we can support more and more institutional demand, but also kind of wider audience of customer base.
You know, I really want to congratulate Stockard on how you've evolved the company so far. It's been very thoughtful and it's taken perhaps a little bit more time, but it's a really solid foundation. And Israel and I are seeing this in a number of the Bitcoin focused companies that we work with or that we've talked to, is that there is that longer time horizon. There is that foundation of generating cash flow and not growth at all cost, which has been kind of the mantra. So I understand where you need to signal the market. But you know, when you're talking about your upcoming fundraise, who would be an ideal investor for you? Would you be talking to Bitcoin-focused VCs or financial institutions? And how might somebody get in touch with you that might be interested in considering an investment in Stockard?
So we are, like, over the last couple of years in Stockard's history, we always try to get capital from our very strategic investors, right, who has kind of understanding the market and can help us grow the business, right? Because raising capital is not the only perspective for us. It's raising the capital from the right entity or right person that helps us in the growth story, right? And Stockard was quite fortunate to have such investors, right? We have a very strong pool of investors that really helped us in the company to put in the right direction, with whom I can chat I have pinged a lot of investors quite a lot over the time, and to get some feedback and to get some understanding is how to structure the direction. So what we are looking for at the moment is an investor who understands Bitcoin and who understands also the idea of derivatives as a structured product. So any investor that thinks, okay, they have some mindset, some products that they would like to bring in the market, we are happy to discuss and create a collaboration, right? Because we see finding the right issuance, because we are not going to be in the issuance business fully ourselves. We are a platform infrastructure business, right? But what we want to be as a Stockard, as a platform, is anybody who is thinking of Bitcoin derivatives and structured products should think of Stockard. Hey, I want to create a portfolio of hash rate contracts, right? Or diversify my hash rate exposure, right? You can go in Stockard and buy and create a portfolio. Hey, I want to get a structured products because I'm sitting on 200, 300 Bitcoin, and I want to have a structured product with a downside protected and upside cap to de-risk some of my price volatility exposure. Those investors should think of stock, right? So we need the right issuance partner, and those kind of investors who have that level of conviction, understanding, and capacity would like to happy to discuss with them. Also, we are quite keen on talking to asset managers, boutique asset managers who are eager tokenize some of their assets and tokenize in this new way and target a new group of investors. Right. Because I think the market is changing. We will again soon go into low interest market. I'm not expecting 1-2% in the next couple of years, maybe the next couple of short duration years. But I think it will go in a sliding downscale. That means instrument need to be rethought again. And we need to bring also the right instrument in the right way. And that's also the reason for Stockard's success over the years, right? We always try to find the right instrument in the right time, rather than just blindly tokenizing for the sake of tokenizing, right? So we need those financial institutions or asset managers or private banks or wealth managers who are eager to bring such an asset, because then it's a strategic investment for us also. The third category, as I mentioned, is exchange or market makers, because liquidity is key. And securities in tokenized format can grow significantly if there is a proper market making capacity, if there is a proper, you know, exchange listing or borrowing, lending and all these things, right? So that's also another third category, right? And anybody who thinks that they can also contribute in Stalker in different ways, please feel free to reach out to me. You can reach out to me on my email ID, as I can share over here, and maybe you can put on the show notes. It's Arnab, A-R-N-A-B at stokr.io. Feel free to write to me, and yeah, happy to take the conversation from there.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll definitely include that in the show notes. Arnab, you know, maybe quickly before we wrap up, last time we spoke, you mentioned the U.S. is the only jurisdiction you're not currently servicing. What would need to change? You know, what are you looking out for in order to be able to service the U.S.?
I would say definitely there are two sides. The reason why we did not explore the U.S. market is it's cost intensive. That's the first thing. It's not because of okay. The regulators are bad, right? It's cost intensive and we need to justify the cost. As I mentioned, we are very cash disciplined, right? We try to find our market fit in a small scale. Now, I think we have achieved that level. Now we are kind of exploring even how to open the US market with the right partnerships and everything, right? And we see there is a potential, right? So there is, I don't think, because we are not issuing unregulated securities, and in that way trying to, these are regulated securities, we need to find the right broker dealer partners, right distributions. Definitely tradability will be not as simplistic as we will do in the non-US market, because you can do P2P swap and everything, and maybe the US market is a bit different, but I think the still is possibilities are there, still a lot of things to explore, right? Where I think more and more opportunities are coming is collaboration, right? The capital market infrastructure is very fragmented globally in the currently, right? Using a DLT infrastructure, what is happening is you are relying on the liquid, and anybody who interacts with liquid can actually bring it. And that's how we did all the exchange integrations, right? In traditional way, it's very hard to do that. We did integrations of those kind of platforms in a matter of a few days. For example, we did a node split of CMS tier as the MicroStrategy did the stock split. And that was done in a very shorter duration without a huge admin cost. In traditional market, you cannot do it. So I think the main thing what you're trying to do is finding the right partners, creating a network of the right partners to bring the products in the right jurisdiction via the right partners, right? Because if we try to cut short of finding the right partners and doing it the right way, ultimately the cost is being paid by our investors or the users that are using Stalker, right? And which we don't want.
That's great to hear that there is a clear path towards entering also the US market. And that it's not due to, you know, maybe some of the other things I would have thought, but makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, there's plenty more that we could talk about, but you know, we're kind of closing in on time here. Lynn, anything else that you want to mention? Or
I just have to say I'm so excited about this conversation. I'm a former Wall Streeter, and so, you know, when I sometimes I'm just like baffled by the fact that you know, the market, to your point, Arnab, early on in the conversation, that in all these years that we've gone through the digitalization of information and of entertainment, of news and distributed, you know, forms of communication, that the stock market and capital markets have remained exactly the same, and they just feel so outdated. So I think it's just fantastic what you're doing. I think it's really revolutionary. And I think it's just a big effort, but a really important effort to bring the capital markets up to the level of transparency, of tradability, of global acceptance, that everything else in our life is now moving on in the digital format. So yeah, just want to leave it with whatever you would like final messages, and where we can find you and follow you. I'm sure that we'll have you back on again as Stalker continues to evolve.
No, I think that thanks a lot, Lynn, for having me also in Israel. Just a final message, if I may. I think there's a very interesting opportunity to create this infrastructure on Bitcoin, because now with the L2 discussions, I think market is understanding what is potentially possible on Bitcoin for a lot of people, a lot of time frame. I think we spend a lot of time in the block size war and everything, right? So development and discussions on Bitcoin kind of stopped, right? But now we are again back into those era of conversation. I'm quite excited to do that. And I think one interesting angle, if a lot of tokenization, even what Larry Fink told, right? Every financial assets will be tokenized. I agree. And I think a good starting point will be the Bitcoin derivatives and structured products, because this asset can natively stay on this infrastructure, right? And as market will try to understand and learn about that, more and more other private market assets will come. because the private market asset infrastructure is so fragmented that they require this kind of architecture, right? And I think this is kind of what the market can get out of that. Another thing which I would like to share over here is, as you mentioned a few minutes back, right? Creating a Bitcoin company or the company that is working on the Bitcoin is hard. So the founders have to be really disciplined compared to other infrastructure, right? Where you get capital for issuing token warrants and everything, as Stockout doesn't do those things, right? So we have to be very conservative, but sometimes I think constraining capital makes the best out of you, because you can find the best team, you can actually create a strong cohesive bond, but also you can validate the product in a small setting before you go to the next stage, right? And this, I think, is also an opportunity for founders like us in the space, in the Bitcoin space primarily.
Well, you know, congrats again, Arnab. I mean, it's a fascinating example of all the innovation that's happening, you know, using the Bitcoin technology. Not much else to add. I think it's been a fascinating conversation. Very much look forward to keeping up with the success of Stoker. And it'd be great to have you back on at a later date. Thanks for joining.
Would love to. Thanks a lot, Israel. Thanks, Lynn, for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment. This helps others find us, which is especially important for this new podcast. And if we had lawyers, they'd tell us to tell you that the content of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not to be considered investment advice or a recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the episode. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.